today on Ag News Daily.
The reality world, even Hollywood's kind of a small world, you find out. All of the people, whether they're the camera people, the audio, the producers, they're all like subcontractors. So they work for a ton of different production companies. And every one of them was coming up to all of us saying, man, your family dynamics, you have so much going. You have so many things. You guys would make just an awesome reality show.
Well, we're back in the studio together, Delaney. Do you like being in the studio together, or would you rather be recording virtually?
No, I think I like being in person.
I think it's got a little bit better banter. We at least have a little bit more fun together. And the backdrop of the hotel room.
Yeah. And I appreciate you wore deodorant today.
Yes, that's fair. Man, you got me speechless on that one. I like that. I did shower this morning just for you listeners. But we're getting a shower right now, so let's jump into some weather. Temperatures will be warmer in the west and cooler in the east to start off next week. A small system is moving through right now, and there may be one that moves through early next week that could reinforce some shots of colder air east of the Rockies, but the trend will be warmer temperatures for later in the week. In the northern plains, a storm exited the region yesterday, which includes some breezy winds in the area. The storm brought widespread heavy rain to the Dakotas, which will help build some soil moisture in the dry areas. Cold air is filling in behind this system through the weekend before temperatures, like we said, will be back above normal next week. In the central and southern plains, a strong storm system there also brought widespread showers and thunderstorms throughout the region earlier this week, though the driest areas in the southwest did not get much out of that storm. Instead, strong winds will likely dry out the soils more and that they've already been, and severe storms that have been rolling through that region as well missed those areas. The Midwest, like we talked about, has already received some heavy rain in the western parts. So this came with some severe weather, a couple of tornadoes in Iowa. A small system may move through early next week with some showers and another burst of cooler air before temperatures will again start to raise later in the week. Despite some heavier rain, though, Delaney, it looks like planting may continue at a normal pace, but I don't know about here locally. It seems to be pretty saturated.
Yeah, it certainly does, Tanner. I don't think anybody's going to be getting in the planter anytime soon, especially with some of that heavy rain coming through this weekend. But the warm weather we've been experiencing here in parts of the Midwest certainly helped planters continue to roll. Maybe not quite as fast as we thought, though. I know last week we were thinking maybe double digits.
That's
we
right.
Didn't quite get there, Tanner.
Yeah, I was a little surprised to see that report.
Well, as of April 14th, just 6% of the nation's crop has been planted in the top 18 corn-growing states, up just 3% from the last week. We also saw growers get a start on planting for the soybean crop, with 3% of that crop now in the ground. Oats in the top 9 oat-growing states reflected 43% planted, and winter wheat has headed in 7 of the top 18 states. So definitely seeing some progress, but maybe won't see a lot of progress with all this heavy rain.
Yeah, I don't anticipate to see the next report jump a lot, but maybe that's some backyarditis and just looking at what happened here. However, California has 100% of their winter wheat crop rated good to excellent, according to the USDA report. 55% of that state's crop has headed out, according to that April 15th report we were just talking about. In other news, CHS Inc. announced on Tuesday its plans to buy 8 Cargill grain facilities in 5 different states. According to the news released by CHS, CHS has said that it signed an intent to purchase agreement with Cargill. Those Cargill elevators are located in Pipestone and Maynard, Minnesota, Morris and Seneca, Illinois, Holdridge, Nebraska, Cheyenne Wells and Byers in Colorado, and Parker in South Dakota. In all, the purchase would add about 15.5 million bushels of grain storage capacity to CHS Inc.'s business. The purchase is tentatively planned to close in early June of 2024, according to CHS. The financial terms of the deal were not disclosed by the companies. CHS stated, purchasing these grain assets is part of a larger strategy to invest in our enterprise supply chain, efficiently connecting our growers to the global marketplace. Cargill stated in their statement on Tuesday that the two companies have a strong partnership based on shared values, strategic alignment, and an effective and efficient business model. At this point, Delaney, CHS Inc. is the nation's number 2 grain handling company in North America, according to a top 10 list of grain majors from 2022, so this will only add to their capacity.
That's right. Well, Tanner, are you looking to become John Deere's next CTO?
You know, I want the job that reviews the applications. I don't think I'm qualified to be CTO.
Well, for those of you thinking chief technology officer, it's not that. It's actually their chief tractor officer. In an announcement earlier this week, John Deere shared this new role, CTO role, which they defined as the ultimate influencer adventure. With the help of NFL quarterback Brock Purdy, they've launched their hunt for their first ever CTO. They shared they're looking for a witty and charismatic content creator, sorry Tanner, you might be out, to help tell the story of their multiple brands that celebrate farmers, contractors, groundskeepers, and brand fans. If you're interested in applying, you can submit a short form video with your pitch about what you bring to the job. What do you think, Tanner?
Yeah, I don't think I qualify, but again, I stand by my words. I want to be the application reviewer.
Well, we also saw an iconic moment for agriculture this week as Time Magazine announced Beth Ford, the Land O'Lakes president and CEO, as one of Time 100's most influential people in the world. So that was a big win there for agriculture.
That is a big win. And we also saw that the American Farm Bureau Federation reported on Tuesday that a new study from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, also known as the EPA, showed that the U.S. agriculture represents under 10% of total U.S. emissions when compared to other economic sectors. Overall, U.S. greenhouse gas emissions increased from 2021 to 2022 by 1.3%, even though agricultural emissions dropped 1.8%, the largest decrease of any economic sector. The 10% of the total U.S. emissions number put out by agriculture is behind transportation, electric power, the industrial sector, but ahead of the commercial sector and residential as a percentage of total U.S. greenhouse gas emissions. The nearly 2% drop in U.S. agricultural emissions from 21 to 22 highlights the success and continued importance of voluntary conservation practices that help the farmers and ranchers have access to finances for their research and technology needed to take even better care of the natural resources. Munch reported 2022 marks the lowest U.S. ag greenhouse gas emissions since Delaney 2012.
I think that's another big win for agriculture to stick a feather in their cap. I hope other folks recognize that as well.
That's right. Hopefully it gets a lot of publicity.
Well, a quick update on the avian influenza outbreak. Michigan officials have now reported that the H5N1 strain has infected 3 dairy herds in their state. USDA also provided additional recommendations that farmers should test their herds for the virus before moving cattle between states. With the newest reports coming from Michigan, this now marks 29 dairy herds confirmed in 18 different states. In other news, House Ag Chairman Glenn Thompson said that although we haven't had many delays and we haven't seen a farm bill come to fruition yet in 2023, he felt confident they would get a bill marked up before Memorial Day weekend. However, Chairwoman Debbie Stabenow cautioned that they haven't set an exact timeline and didn't want to overpromise, Tanner.
Wow, that seems like an aggressive timeline. It's just right around the corner. We've also seen supervisors in Dickson County, Iowa, voted unanimously on Tuesday to implement new restrictions on the placement of a carbon dioxide pipeline to create larger buffers between them and people and animals. By approving the ordinance, the county faces the threat of litigation from Summit Carbon Solutions. Summit Carbon is on the cusp of potentially receiving approval for its project from Iowa regulators. As a reminder, Summit seeks to build a 5-state-wide pipeline system that will transport captured carbon dioxide from ethanol plants to North Dakota for its underground storage there. It has sued 5 other counties, Delaney, in Iowa, that have enacted similar ordinances. Dickinson's ordinance includes less restrictive separation distances, which county leaders are hoping will preclude them from future litigation. Notably, they reduced the distance from cities that would be 2 miles down to 1,600 feet, or by about 85%. That similar setback requirement is also for homes. The ordinance also requires pipelines to be at least a half a mile from schools, nursing homes, medical facilities, public parks, and livestock operations. However, the reduced distances still have the potential to affect Summit's planned route through the county, and that is currently being weighed by the Iowa Utilities Board. Summit Carbon did not comment on the ordinances at the time of this reporting, Delaney, but I'm sure we will see more about this in the upcoming weeks.
Yeah, we certainly will. I wish the best of luck to that county. You know, I think sounds like they tried to put some measures in place not to see litigation, but you never know.
A little bit more thoughtful than others.
Yes, that's right. Well, Tanner, as we turn our attention to the world stage, multiple countries are putting some heat on China. Earlier this week, Germany's chancellor conveyed the European Union's concerns about the trade relationship between the EU and China. As tensions continue to rise between the two superpowers, it appears that some have indicated a potential trade war is looming. Here in the United States, the Biden administration made a pretty big announcement on Wednesday as President Biden appeared in Pittsburgh on the campaign trail. He took the opportunity to announce that they were going to begin taking measures to increase tariffs on imports of Chinese steel and aluminum. According to White House economic advisor Jared Bernstein, he assured reporters this week that the move by the Biden administration would not have any impact on inflation or any negative effects on the U.S. economy as a whole. We've also seen conversations ramp up this week between Iran and Israel. Perhaps an end to their conflict is in sight. Israel's war cabinet met for the third time this week to decide on their response to Iran's missiles and drone strikes, Tanner, so perhaps a little cooling off on the tensions there.
We hope so. So, Delaney, Hogzilla or Jaws? Are you ready for some wild news?
This must be our headline of the week.
That's right. More humans are killed annually by wild pigs than by sharks, according to a new study. By slice, puncture, hook, and gouge, the global number of fatalities from wild pig attacks has been rising by the decade. Between 2014 and 23, the average number of fatal shark attacks worldwide was 5.8 per year, but the average fatal wild pig attacks was 19.7. In 24 alone, there's already been 7 deaths from wild pig incidents. According to the groundbreaking research published in 2023, the number of humans killed by wild pig attacks have climbed steadily since 2000, for a total of 172 deaths, including some freakishly grisly fatalities in Texas. Most of the public doesn't know the facts about wild pig attacks, says the writer John J. Mayer, lead author and study of the wild pig research pioneer. It's not sharks, wolves, or bears that kill most people. It's the wild pigs, and the numbers are consistently trending up. His study included 1,532 attacks along with those 172 deaths. The attacks have been horrific. Typically, wild pigs don't bother anybody unless they feel threatened, but when they do, they deliver tremendous damage to the human body in a matter of seconds, Delaney, and it can be gruesome. We found that in the fatal attacks, 55% of the people died on scene. The wild pig population has been ballooning to nearly 7 million, and the annual damage to the ag economy is $1.5 billion, according to the USDA, Delaney. Mayer states the impact of wild pigs state here, you hear about shark attacks all the time in the news, but you most never hear about wild pig attacks.
Well, I think that's part of the reason African swine fever threats are also concerning, as well as other disease. Well, Tanner, I don't know if you've heard or seen any of the headlines around a very now famous farm family, but the McBee Dynasty reality TV show has taken the world by storm. We're sitting down with them here today to learn more about what it's been like to be on a reality TV show, some of the negative headlines surrounding the family, and more. Well, as we mentioned earlier, the McBee Dynasty show has really taken over the internet, TikTok, and everywhere by storm. Joined today by Steve and Cole McBee. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having us on.
Yeah, appreciate it.
So you guys have become these internet TV influence superstars overnight here. Excited to learn more about your story. But Steve, I'd love to start with your journey to become a farmer, because on the TV show, they really don't talk a lot about how you got your start in farming and how you grew this big empire that we see today.
Yeah, it was kind of a crazy deal. So I have this this innate ability to outdo myself, and I don't know what small is, so I'm just like, I go. So we're first generation farmer. I think that's something that I wish they would have spent a little more time on, because all due respect to all them generational farmers and the people that, you know, spent a lifetime doing it. So I've always been under the belief what one man does, another man can do as well. And I bought our first farm in 98. I had two boys. Cole wasn't even born at that time. So, and then just started growing from there. Was always passionate about the outdoors. I was from a small town, Bramer, Missouri, 20 minutes south of Gallatin, and started a business, a telecommunications business, actually, when I was 20 years old. and said, I want ground. I grew up hunting, fishing. I mean, that's all my dad did is take us outdoors, farming, everything. So I was like, I want a place of my own that I can leave to my sons and daughters, if I had one, but that I could leave to my children. And so I bought my first farm and just started growing from there and was passionate about it. Loved to get my butt kicked, trying to figure it all out. I'm a reader, and I you know, trying to figure out, you know, farming is probably the hardest thing you could do compared to other businesses because there's so many variables out of your control. And so we've paid a lot of learning curves. I feel like we're really, really getting things in line now as we've got some good partners that we work with and really got it figured out. I'm a lifetime learner, and we continue to get better. And that's kind of the story of how it progressed. Everyone always asks me, how did you put this land together? I literally would go to the courthouse, get everybody, every neighbor that owned farms around me, and I'd call them. And they'd be like, some of them, the irony is some of them would say, don't ever call me again. I'm never selling. Oh, I'm sorry. No problem. I just thought I'd check. 6 months later, hey, are you still interested in this farm? And that's kind of how I put this. Missouri's very chopped up. So it's not like North Dakota, South Dakota, Wyoming, Texas. It's very chopped up. So it's hard to put together continuous pieces of ground in Missouri.
Yeah, so they say on the show you have about 40,000 acres. Obviously, those are not contiguous acres. Is that accurate to where the farm size is today?
Yeah, it's pretty accurate. We fluctuate a little bit, you know, up and down, but they're definitely not continuous. I think our largest continuous piece is, what, like 4,300 acres, Cole?
Yeah, around there, around the lodge, you know, around your house stuff is the biggest piece. And we have a couple other bigger farms that he's pieced together throughout the years. But like you said, I mean, most of the time you go up here, if you look on any like plat map or anything, I mean, it's all like 80 acre chunks, like 120 acres, 80 acres, 40 acres. Like it's split up so much that, I mean, to get that big farm, I don't know, there was probably 15 different landowners you bought from just to put together our big farm. I mean, over 15 years. I mean, it's been like a process over the last 15, 20 years for him to piece together these farms. And luckily, we're so lucky that he started when he did, because if you would try to do that nowadays, there's just no way you could own the amount of, or you buy the ground nowadays with the prices things are at. I mean, this was 2000 to 2015, whenever he was really getting into it. And we're lucky we did, because it wouldn't be, we wouldn't have near as much nowadays if we were trying it now.
Yeah. And you guys are just really diversified. Appreciated seeing that through on the show. You have the crop ground that you talk a lot about or tried to talk about on the show. How many different businesses are wrapped up into the farming entity today?
Well, so we have McBee's Coffee and Car Wash, which that's something that we looked at. We started on that back in like 2018, doing all the research. Wanted something that was a more predictable cash flow instead of the large swings like in the farming world. But we have, you know, I've always been a builder, so I have a home building company, had a ton of rentals. You know, I bought a ton of investment properties in 2008, 9, and 10 when the market crashed. At one time, I had right at 3,000, I had 15 different apartment complexes. They didn't really touch on any of that. We've got McBee Meat Company, which is kicking off. It's our direct-to-consumer meat company. And then obviously, like I said, the rentals, we've got the car washes, lots of other small LLCs.
So Cole, you know, your dad shared his story of how he got started first generation. You're the second generation now to farm in Gallatin. Why did you decide to come back to the family farm? Was that ever really a decision for you, or did you always just know that was what you were going to do?
For me, it was something I've always loved. Like ever since I was younger, I mean, my brothers and I grew like every chance we had outside of school, every chance we had, like if we were hanging out with friends on weekends after school, we were on the farm. Like every chance we got, we were on the farm. We were running equipment. We were, you know, fishing, hunting, doing whatever we could on the farm. And that's just how we grew up. And I really took to it whenever I was, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old. I started, you know, everybody starts out, you know, in raking hay. You know, you start out in a tractor, small power, horsepower tractor, raking hay. You start out with the hay stuff during the summer, helping out. And I started out with that. And, you know, I just love, it's just something that I've always loved, being in a tractor. You know, it's peaceful to me. It's also work, and I love doing it. And So I kind of knew at a young age that's what I was going to do. And ever since I, you know, as I grew and got older, I just continued to love it more and more. And so there was really never a question on what I was doing. You know, as soon as I was in high school, I already knew what I, you know, I wanted to do. I went to college and, you know, I went to a 2-year college. I went to Iowa State and I ended up, you know, coming back to the farm so much. I ended up coming back and going to a community college for 2 years just because I was driving back every weekend, running a combine or running a tractor, you know, helping plant season. So it just kind of was a waste for me to be, I was driving back so much. It wasn't a waste, but I just, I wasn't going to enough classes. So I needed to get back to somewhere closer. So I came to a community college and, you know, got my 2-year ag degree just because I was just here close to home. And it's something I've always loved and something I always knew I was going to do. And still to this day, it's definitely my favorite thing to do.
So you guys obviously have a great farming operation. You've got a lot of diversity going on. What possessed you to go on a reality TV show? How did that whole idea transpire? And was that a family conversation where you decided to do that?
That was multiple family conversations. So yeah, I started with Steven being on Joe Millionaire. So he was on a dating show 2 years ago. And they brought the final 6 girls out to the farm and ranch. And so the producers, which is the reality world, even Hollywood's kind of a small world, you find out. All of the people, whether they're the camera people, the audio, the producers, they're all like subcontractors. So they work for a ton of different production companies. And every one of them was coming up to all of us saying, man, your family dynamics, you have so much going. You have so many things. You guys would make just an awesome reality show. And anyways, it kind of just grew legs from there. That was kind of the segue into where we're at today. And they hit us up and had a, so actually we had like, what, 4 different production companies call that was wanting to,
The word definitely got out after Joe Millionaire. Like they were like, man, someone needs to get a reality show. Like we started growing on social media a little bit, not huge, but like, you know, our farms page and Steven and everybody, and, you know, people would be commenting on there like real life Yellowstone, y'all need a reality show, like what, you know, all this different things. And then it was like after the Joe Millionaire and they came out, I'm guessing the people who work on Joe Millionaire went back to Hollywood or wherever, you know, out there and just started telling everybody about it, because we had within 4 months after that, 6 months after that, we had 4 or 5 different production companies reach out to us. And then we had meetings with all of them, and we went with the one that we felt like fit us the most and the one that, you know, we liked and felt like we hit it off the best with. And I think we're really happy to this day with who we're working with. Extremely happy.
Now, on the show, everything just seems over dramatized. I mean, between the relationships with you guys, you're always allegedly out partying. Like, it just kind of, in my opinion, blew things out of proportion. How much of that was reality for you versus they produce something that makes good television?
It was a real reality show. I mean, everything's real, but like we said, you know, that partying might be like one day after 2 weeks of working hard, you know, or like, you know, that weekend out might be after 2 weeks straight of not taking a day off, working every day from sun up to sundown. And then, you know, the partying. So it's not like all we do is party. I mean, we do like to have fun, but we work most of the time. I mean, we make sure our work's done before we go have fun.
Yeah, and Steve, you were sharing that they really didn't show a lot of the farming aspect of what you were doing. Maybe they showed the business deals, you guys traveling a lot. If you could change it, what would you wish they had showed more of?
Well, I think just like the hard, you know, all the work and energy, like the long days, the long nights, you know, Cole's in a planter for 48 straight hours. Some of the stuff that, you know, I think that they felt wouldn't be like their data or whatever they get for viewership. And they're like, trust the process. I mean, it definitely, I'm not a big, I think I hadn't watched a lot of TV. I work all the time. I don't really watch TV. But I watched some reality shows before ours come out, like just a couple months right before it dropped, when they gave us the date, just to see what it was like. And I would definitely confidently say that we're the most realistic reality show out there. And like they were telling us, like even our production company, he's like, they do a lot of these reality shows, and they walk in, the people's like, well, what do you want us to do? And they're like, so they go, we have to be the whole storyteller. When they came into us, we gave them our schedule, like a 3-month schedule of the dates that they said. We said everything in green is what we have to do. Everything in blue is what is on our schedule. You know, it's not an absolute must. And they looked at this and they're like, you just did our entire job. And so they were like blown away with everything we had going. And they're like, there's no way we could fit this into five seasons. And they're like, this is incredible. You guys have so much going. So I kind of got off base from what you were saying, but I wish they would have showed the more of the actual farming and what the science, the work, everything that goes into it, because there is just so much information. I mean, I could talk, and I won't, like they, you know, the agronomy side. I could get into the soil biology and the microbes and everything. We're farming soil. We're not farming corn and soybeans. And I could go on, and there's so much stuff that we're trying to do to grow healthy soil, which in return pays the dividends through the crop yield. And everything that, like, shining a light on how many farmers get a black eye from the East Coast, West Coast, not to geographically stereotype, but I'm just saying the people that don't have the understanding of what we're really doing, it's easy just to point fingers and say, oh, they're causing global warming or whatever. And we're so far from that. We're actually helping. And I wanted them to showcase more of the good, all of that that we're doing.
I agree. I would say I wish they would have just shown a little more about, I mean, I know us and every single local farmer around here that we know, they it's a lifestyle as anybody who's a farmer. It's not a job. It's your whole life. Like, you have to give everything you have to it. I mean, it doesn't matter what day of the week it is. You don't really have days of the week anymore. I mean, that's what we laugh about now. Like, weekends aren't really a deal to us anymore. Once when farming world, you just have rain days and dry days. You work every day is dry, and in the rain days, you figure out what you can do. Even then, you know, you're in the shop working. But I think we just wanted to I would like to show, you know, what the hard work that goes into farming and the type of lifestyle it is, and the type, like, people just don't understand. I think, you know, the 10 o'clock phone calls that cows are out, or, you know, during calving season, whenever you're having heifers that are calving and you got to be there, you know, every couple hours throughout the night to check on them. And there's just different things that, I mean, I know we do. I know all my friends, local farmers, like everybody, it's just what they do. And it's a lifestyle to us. It's normal to us. But a lot of people don't realize, you know, what goes into it.
Well, we're going to catch up with the McBees a little bit more later next week for part two. So stay tuned for that, Tanner. But that was a juicy conversation.
All right, it's time for some market commentary. Delaney, what do you have for us today?
Well, Tanner, it appears markets have their eyes set for now on planting progress. Although it's been a slow start, we're expecting to see range-bound trading here for both corn and soybeans until we get more of a concrete idea on the planting season ahead of us. The bright spot, however, for soybeans continues to be the crush market as more new facilities are coming online. NOPA crush numbers have been relatively strong, and as far as exports are going, that's driving the markets a little bit cautiously here as we await for some more conclusive production numbers coming out of Brazil regarding their crop. But we certainly have seen China stepping up to the table and buying specifically from Brazil and a lot of our other trading partners. And that certainly may soften the markets here.
That's right. In the outside markets, U.S. crude oil stocks rose to a 10-month high. This is the fourth consecutive weekly build that we have seen. Crude oil prices have hovered right around $80 per barrel after topping out last Friday, nearly a six-month high. This will be some fresh fodder as we see the Israel and Iran conflict potentially escalate. In the cattle markets, the USDA's NAS has announced their weekly results of canceling July cattle report. The NAS noted that reporting program has been put on hold, reflecting their new appropriated budget levels. Many responded that they were very disappointed in the move, as it comes at a time when the cattle markets continue to remain highly volatile. And of course, with the lowest herd numbers in decades, this is a big deal, Delaney.
This is. The cattle on feed report is going to get paused in the month of July, which is typically when we see, you know, cattle on feed, cattle maybe out to pasture. Summer grilling season is heating up, so a lot of folks are pretty concerned about this. We've gotten a lot of comments from NCBA and other top agricultural groups saying this is coming at a really poor time.
Yeah, it seems to be a strategic lapse in judgment, whether that is due to those wanting to go on vacation during the summer.
It's budgeting purposes, Tanner.
Budgeting, that's
budgeting,
right.
Budgeting purposes.
Well, as far as John Deere's budget go, you asked me if I was going to apply for the CTO, but are you?
Oh, I don't think I'm quite witty or charismatic enough for them to be in the CTO role.
Listeners, go check it out. If you're watching us on YouTube, make sure to share this. leave us a comment, like it, subscribe. We appreciate all that you do. We continue to value your feedback, so that way we can make Ag News Daily and these new productions better for you. But Delaney, for today, what do you say? Should we let the listeners go?
Let's let them go.